So, Fry, normally this is not a big news story. NATO exercises going on over in Europe. NATO begins a month of exercises in Georgia today. But a couple of details that actually are important. Number one, Georgia is not the breakaway former Soviet republic. Georgia is not a member of NATO. And these NATO exercises come less than a year after the cross-border invasion of Georgia by Russian troops. Joining us now is Stephen Eek, Russian affairs analyst for our partner, the BBC. He joins us from London. Stephen Eek, what is the significance of these NATO exercises, given that, at least on the surface, they are a test of tensions in the region between Russia and Georgia? Stephen?
Well, good morning. NATO actually says that it doesn't want these exercises in Georgia to be seen as a test, a litmus test or a stress test, as we've just been hearing, of relations between East and West, between NATO and Russia. NATO insists that Georgia is merely hosting these exercises and that it doesn't want any other sort of interpretation to be put on that. However, given that they're taking place in Georgia, which has a very poor relationship with Moscow, and given that last August Georgia lost a war with Russia over two breakaway regions, South Ossetia and Abkhazia, it was inevitably going to be very, very controversial. And what we've seen is that effectively these exercises have derailed the process of restoring links between NATO and Russia that had just started to get underway after last August's war. If you listen to Russian officials, they're very angry. They say that this is muscle flexing, it's a provocation, and that given the instability inside Georgia, NATO should really be focusing its attention on that particular problem. It's interesting to look at the very colourful language that Russia's envoy to NATO, Dmitry Rogozin, was using just yesterday. He said that NATO might just as well conduct these manoeuvres in a madhouse.
Well, if NATO doesn't want the interpretation that this is muscle flexing in the interpretation of the Russians, why don't they just cancel these operations?
Two reasons. NATO says, first of all, look, these were planned way before the events of August last year. There's a great
They always
deal.
Say that, though.
Well, they say that. I mean, that's a convenient administrative and bureaucratic excuse, of course. The other major reason for this, I believe, is that NATO has given not a fixed commitment to membership for Georgia, but it has said that at some stage in the future, providing Georgia continues to pursue its pro-Western policies of integration with NATO, with the European Union, of putting in places the reforms that are necessary, it will actually join NATO. NATO, of course, has said the same thing to Ukraine. Seen from the Russian perspective, that is extremely provocative. After all, NATO has expanded into Central Europe and then further onto the Baltic states since the fall of communism, and Moscow has tolerated that policy varyingly, acceptingly. But the red line, if you like, for Moscow is Georgia and Ukraine. Let's not forget that Russia actually wants to see regime change in Georgia. It doesn't like President Saakashvili. It believes him to be destabilizing and dangerous. And Mr. Saakashvili himself, of course, is in a difficult position, which the Russians are using to try to forge ahead with that policy aim of their own.
Well, Saakashvili's relationship with Washington is a bit of an unknown at this point. Certainly got a lot of support last August when the Russians invaded. Is it possible that the commencement of these NATO, war games or whatever it is, military operations in Georgia, is a sign that the Barack Obama administration really doesn't have a Russia policy ready to roll out and is just letting this proceed because it really doesn't have its policy in order?
Well, I think it would be premature to talk about a policy vacuum. After all, there are the foreign policy experts who are working on U.S. policy towards Russia, largely the same as under the previous administration of President Bush. However, if you look at the difference in rhetoric and the difference in public attitudes, at least, then we see something really rather different from the agenda pursued by former President Bush and certainly by Condoleezza Rice, who, of course, was an expert on the former Soviet Union and a key proponent of expansion into Western institutions for the countries that were once part of the Soviet Union. What we're actually waiting is for something slightly firmer than anodyne statements of calling for Georgia to remain peaceful, for it to remain calm, for political solution to that country's now chronic instability to be found. But the decision is actually a very, very difficult one for Washington. Does Washington effectively turn its back on countries that are still, despite internal difficulties, pursuing a pro-Western agenda merely to appease Moscow? That looks very unlikely.
Go ahead.
I say, however, the Russians have actually seen, I believe, a window of opportunity to halt a process they view as inherently hostile to their own national interest.
Well, what do you make then of Saakashvili's government? And the Russians have made no secret that they want regime change. Yesterday, the Interior Ministry inside Georgia said it had uncovered a Russian-supported plan to overthrow President Saakashvili. The Russians deny it. But these are disturbing sort of details if the tensions rise from this point onward.
There are chronic political tensions inside Georgia, which we've seen not just in the form of street demonstrations now continuing for many weeks, demanding President Saakashvili resigns, but also in a succession of alleged plots that have been broken by the Georgian government and its special services, allegedly, repeatedly backed by Russia. Very little solid evidence has appeared of this, it has to be said, raising lots of questions of whether Mr. Saakashvili is attempting to bolster domestic support. And he is increasingly unpopular. That's an important fact to state. The question being, of course, whether he's trying to bolster support by saying Georgia has a powerful external enemy. But Mr. Saakashvili was seriously wounded, metaphorically, by losing the war in August last year with Russia. And an interesting development I want to mention also in that respect is the agreement signed some 10 days ago between Russia and Georgia's two breakaway regions, which effectively puts their borders under Russian control. That is yet another sign of how far those two regions have slipped from Georgia's control.
And so the NATO exercises go for an entire month. The fact that, for the next 4 weeks we're going to be dealing with this, is that, I mean, wouldn't it be better if this was just a matter of days?
NATO isn't going to scupper its plans that have been in the pipeline for a long time to appease Moscow at this stage. It'll be interesting now to see whether Russia actually goes ahead and further severs its links with NATO just as they were restarting.
Right.
Well, certainly a very tense atmosphere.
And they've got a month to do it. Stephen Eek will be watching the situation. BBC Russian Affairs Analyst joining us from London. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.